Good morning, 8:38. Finger Lakes Morning News. It's time to get healthy with Finger Lakes Health. So we say welcome once again to Laura Turbide. Good morning.
Good morning, Chad. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I know we have couch to cubby going on, getting ready for the cubby chase. We got community mobility screening.
We
Anything
do.
Else I'm leaving out?
No, but definitely join Couch to Cubby. Get ready to run is what we call it. And of course, we'd love to have you join us for the race in July. Raises money for the Jim Dooley Center for Early Learning. We also can use volunteers, water station folks, people who help. We just couldn't do it without the community. So thanks to everybody and expect another fantastic day.
All right. And then the, is it Wednesdays when the community mobility is?
I believe it is. Yes, Wednesdays. And of course, our rehab department is fantastic. So, of course, Maureen Loyal, who we've had on, leads a great team doing a community mobility screening. We also have had programs in Penn Yan, sort of a get up and get moving, to not only do a mobility assessment, but then to get people engaged in some exercise that's safe for them. So between outpatient extended hours at Huntington and at Guernsey Rehab in Geneva and at Penn Yan, super proud of that team. But give them a call if you have any questions or check our website.
All right, let's meet our guest.
Yes, I'm so happy. I haven't had Dr. Feinberg in many, many years. He's a busy guy, but we stole him away. So this morning, Dr. Jason Feinberg, who is our chief medical officer and our vice president of medical affairs, he's an internist, helped head up our hospitalist program for years before this role, also worked as an internist locally in our community after doing undergraduate work at Hobart, then doing his training at SUNY Upstate, then doing some work in the Naval Academy for residency, I think. So quite accomplished. And here this morning to talk with us about Lyme disease, because we know it is a topic with a lot of misinformation. We know there's people, we live in a community and an area where there is risk for that. And we had a conversation at a meeting and then thought, this is the kind of conversation we need to be having with others, not just amongst ourselves. So Dr. Feinberg was gracious enough to give his time to come do some community awareness and education on something that really is important for our region.
Well, welcome back. It's good to see you again.
Hey, good seeing you. Thank you for having me.
So I was talking about this with somebody not that long ago. As a kid growing up, I don't remember ticks or Lyme really being on our radar screen as a big deal. I mean, you might see one once in a while, and that was about it. So why so much more now?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly the vector is the deer that these ticks, the deer tick, are on, and that seems to have grown in maybe the population of deer has expanded, and also in more residential areas we're seeing more deer, and certainly these deer ticks now are harboring the organism that causes Lyme disease at higher rates than they did in the past.
So which ticks carry Lyme? Is it just the deer tick, or are there other varieties too?
Exactly, it is just the deer tick. The name for the deer tick is Ixodes scapularis. We can just call it a deer tick here, but that is the tick that carries Lyme disease.
So it's transmitted only through the bite when they actually burrow in. Is that correct?
Correct. And they have to be really present on the body and buried in for 36 or greater hours to have any ability to transmit the disease itself.
So if you see one on your body, they don't burrow in and then come back out, right? So if you see one that's just walking, you can just get rid of it and you're okay?
Sometimes. Two things. So ticks will, you know, they eat when they're eating. That's why they're burrowing in. They're eating the blood, right? And so if they get engorged, they will come off.
Oh, okay.
So if you have an engorged tick that you find in your presence, in your proximity, that's more of a concern than just the flat tick that you see on your body. Most of the time, because they're so small, you may not even see these ticks. So certainly if they're attached, it's good to know, try to figure out maybe how long you've had that tick on you. Sometimes you can't tell based on where the tick is located.
What are other telltale signs? You know, that bullseye rash, that's one, right?
Yeah, the bullseye rash really can come on anywhere between a couple of days and 30 days after a tick bite. It usually does not occur in the presence of the tick. You can get some local inflammation from the tick, but that's different than the rash that you're describing, which is called the erythema migrans.
if you do find one embedded, this is probably where a lot of the real misinformation comes in. What, there's a million home remedies out there for how to get rid of it. What's the right way?
Yeah, the right way, certainly you can, most everybody has Google now, but you could Google proper tick removal techniques. But it's really to get close to the skin with a pair of tweezers and apply gentle pressure and hold that pressure. Try not to yank it because you could pull the body off and leave the head in, which causes some concerns for infection. But really just to hold steady pressure until the tick comes out.
So then after that, should anybody who finds one embedded at all, should you get tested for Lyme disease then?
No. That's where part of the problem comes in. So there's really very few indications for testing in reality. Certainly if you find a tick on your body that has embedded and is engorged, and you know it's been there for a certain amount of time, say you went out in the morning and now it's the afternoon and you just found a tick, certainly you can simply remove it. And certainly if you find a tick crawling on you or embedded in you, you should be looking, doing a whole body check, shaking out your clothes, all that stuff, because usually where there's one tick, there's more than more ticks. And a lot of people will say, oh my goodness, I've never had a tick on me, but today I had five when I came home from a walk. Also, you know, if you have a walking partner or a buddy that you were doing some outdoor activities with, if you find one, you should alert them so that they can check their body to make sure they're not getting one. I'll have a tick on them as well.
Is there any value to keeping the tick and preserving it as far as having it tested or anything, or is that just something you do for yourself?
Well, there is value in it, particularly if you remove the tick or you find an engorged tick crawling around and you're concerned that it's potentially a deer tick and maybe that tick was on you and you don't know that. An engorged tick really shouldn't be on you. So presumably it was on you. But the value in that is to bring it to someone that can identify it, because not all ticks are deer ticks, and therefore the deer tick is the one that transmits Lyme's disease. And that would be for identification purposes. But testing the tick has no value for Lyme's disease.
Is there any kind of repellent or anything that works, or should you just, you know, tuck your pants into your socks and make sure you limit exposed skin?
I think any type of repellent may have some benefit, but in reality, I think the best protection is to do surveillance, because they're going to be on you. It's a little bit different than, you know, mosquitoes that are flying around. Usually these ticks are dropping off leaves or grass that you're walking on, and they get on your body regardless of what you put on it.
Also, I think there's such an important part of prevention that we talk about, not only wearing the light clothing, but I've read even things like if you really do have the opportunity when you come in within a couple hours of being inside, great opportunity for surveillance, for showering, for making sure if you do have something there, and also checking your pets. It is, I know I'm a golden retriever gal, yeah. So that's a lot of fur to check and a lot of, but it certainly makes sense to be checking them. And really, I think because they are so small, sometimes it's more in the feel. You can actually feel it more than you can actually see it. And we've dealt with a few ourselves. And I do think it is important to make sure that people, one, are aware that they're of the risk, and in particular because of the climate we're in and because of where we live geographically. I think it's something in the past when we were all growing up, I think people thought more Connecticut and some of those areas, but we're seeing enough now that it really is important. And this whole concept of when is there value in testing, when is there not, what are those symptoms, were something that we were talking about. And we felt like having Dr. Feinberg as the expert come in to just clear up some myths.
Absolutely. So what exactly is Lyme disease, and how does it progress in the body?
Well, Lyme disease is due to the spirochete Borrelia burgdorferi, which the deer tick carries. When it gets into your body, it will create, it attacks various body structures. Most commonly, cause things like arthritis. It gets into your nerves, so it can cause radiculopathy, painful symptoms, paresthesias. And if it gets into your central nervous system, it can cause problems with meningitis, and it can cause ocular problems. And certainly the other one that's very common is a palsy of the seventh nerve in your face. And the seventh nerve closes the eye, so you'll see almost like a Bell's palsy due to Lyme disease. And so in this area, somebody comes in, kind of really not at normal risks for developing Bell's palsy. consideration for testing of Lyme disease. Certainly, if they have known exposures, they're outdoor people, or have reported a recent tick bite that they didn't seek evaluation for, you've got to consider testing for that.
What's the treatment regimen, and does there need to be a positive diagnosis first, or do you start treating if someone is suspected of having Lyme?
That's a great question. There are three stages of Lyme disease. The first one is after the tick bite, within a couple of days to a month, that rash where the tick was, erythema migrans, is a rash of various sizes, but it's generally red around the rim and central clearing of that rash, like a bullseye lesion, and they tend to occur in about 80% of people with a Lyme exposure. At that point, you do not need to be tested. If that's your only finding, that's called early manifestation, and that is simply treated. That's usually 10 to 14 days of doxycycline for that stage. And then there's something called early disseminated, where people start getting the symptoms, right? They get arthralgias, muscle pains, headache, fever, neck stiffness, and sometimes radiculopathy. That can also cause, by that time, you can start getting other neurological manifestations, such as that seventh nerve palsy of the eye. And so that's a little bit different. And so at that point, the treatments are generally either orally, and that can be doxycycline, again, anywhere from 14 to 28 days. There are some other antibiotics that can be used for the similar duration, depending on allergies. And then if you have even further manifestations of which cause the heart to have heart block, and then you're getting a meningitis, then you really are going to need the IV antibiotics. And in that particular case, that's usually, again, for 14 to 28 days, really depending on what systems are involved, and also if oral treatment has failed. Sometimes you'll hear people, well, I was on antibiotic for 28 days orally, but I still had these symptoms. Are these other symptoms are persistent, like the heart block, the meningitis, are developing, so that you would go with the IV antibiotics.
Is there a point at which damage can be beyond where it can be reversed, or can it generally be reversed, or the disease eliminated?
Yeah, most of the time the disease is eliminated with standard treatment. Either at the certainly at the erythema migrans stage and then early disseminated stage. There is some post-Lyme disease syndrome in which patients have some persistent arthritis symptoms. Those are rare now because most people are getting treated in the earlier phase. And so there's about anywhere from 5 to 15% of people that have gotten into that more severe Lyme disease because they didn't seek medical attention may develop this post-Lyme disease. The treatment can be very effective, and people must realize they may still have symptoms for up to six months after the treatment. That's normal. That's the body getting back into a healthy state, but the disease itself has been treated. Most people after 6 months are asymptomatic.
All right, Dr. Jason Feinberg, good information. Thanks for it. It's especially apropos. We get into summer here, and always good to see you.
Oh, great to see you, Ted.
Laura, thank you as always.
Thank you, Ted.
And we'll visit again soon and get healthy with Finger Lakes Health again soon. It's 8:52 now on the Finger Lakes Morning News.